welcome to Nothing Ever Happens in Canada, but we know this is simply not true. This is a Canadian podcast about the myths, legends, and just good old stories Canada has to tell. I'm Canadian Girl. Thanks for joining me today. How's everybody doing? Do you have any last-minute summer plans before she quietly sneaks away? How about any plans for the fall? I have a few friends in the podcast world who are pretty excited for the fall season to begin, because that means Halloween is even closer. Here in Alberta, you can already see fall is starting to creep in. One of the big old trees across the road from my home is already starting to turn yellow. The mornings are getting colder, and the nights are starting to get darker just a little bit earlier. Thank goodness I have my new Canadian Girl Fleece hoodie in the mail, and you can get one too. That's right, we now have a souvenir shop for the channel, thanks to an awesome company called Threadless. Head to our souvenir shop today and grab some Canadian Girl merch to take on your next adventure. There's great items like t-shirts, sweaters, water bottles, mugs, notebooks, and more. There's even different themes to choose from, like the original Canadian Girl logo, a limited time only summer edition logo, and a What the Maple Syrup line that goes with our episode 12 that's one of our most popular adventures here on the channel. The link, of course, will be in the show notes below for our souvenir shop. Watch for more designs to come soon. I will most likely post them on my social media channels when I have them, so make sure you're following me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at the handle at NothingCanada to make sure you don't miss our latest merch and, more important, updates about our latest episodes. Speaking of important, my very important Patreon crew members, Kevin, Jennifer, Bailey, the Into the Portal podcast team, Chris, Bonnie, and our newest Patreon, Vanessa, I thank you all so very much for being a part of my crew. And thank you so much for all the hard work you did this month. We were able to uncover 5 bonus episodes. So give yourself all a huge pat on the back. Your research and hard work has paid off. This August, we were able to uncover a hidden family secret, a haunted hotel that may have just inspired one of the greatest horror stories ever written. We found a Shunka Warakeen, possibly lurking around the fields of Alberta. We also stumbled across what some claim to be the first well-documented case of UFO crop circles made in Canada. And we got our passports out for the first time and went on an out-of-country true crime adventure. Head over to our Patreon page today so you can join the crew of your choice and go on even more adventures with us. One final announcement, and then I promise, no more business stuff. We are now available on iHeartRadio and TuneIn, so you can find us in even more places to listen whenever and wherever you are. Okay, are you still with me? I thank you for that. I know that was a lot. Now let's get to this adventure that you're all here for today. Did you all bring your gear? Is anyone missing anything? I know I gave you all quite a big list last week, but we're going to need it. And is Alan here? He wrote to me and said he did not have a climbing harness for today, so we have one here for him. Just come see me and it's all yours. And if anyone else needs anything, please come see me. We will get you what you need. This is going to be a big adventure. You're not going to want to go without anything that was on the list. We're off today to explore the Mount Waddington Range, located in the center of the Pacific Ranges, which are known to be remote and extremely difficult to climb. Just 350 kilometers north of Vancouver, there is a mystery mountain that back in the 1920s had yet to be discovered and put on a map. It's also the highest peak in the BC Coast Mountains that lies entirely in the province, and we're going straight up it multiple times. That's right, with the help of an amazing mountaineering couple from Canada known as Don and Phyllis Munday. And I can't wait for you to meet them. Everyone got their gear in their packs, packs on your back, coat zipped up tight, and make sure you have your mitts out ready to put on. You're going to want them eventually. Thank you. Let me introduce you to Dawn and Phyllis Monday, because you're going to love them just as much as I do. We will start with Dawn, only because he was born first, in 1890, in Portage la Prairie, Manitoba. His full name? Walter Alfred Dawn Monday. He would move to Vancouver with his family at the age of 19 years old. He was said to be a rather quiet soul. He was a carpenter by trade, a freelance journalist and editor. He also liked to write poetry. He was known for his love of mountain climbing at an early age, and he was a First World War vet that was injured in the Battle of Passchendaele. A bullet fragment would go through his left arm during the battle, leaving his left hand forever weaker and not as useful as it once was. After the war, he built a cabin on Dam Mountain near Vancouver. In 1918, while climbing with a group, he would meet the love of his life, Phyllis. Dawn would make a misstep on that trip, perhaps a bit distracted, causing him to lose his footing during the climb. A rock gave way from under his foot, and he was certain he was a goner, or about to be hurt really badly. When Phyllis, at just 24 years old, would make a leap of faith in order to catch the man that would soon be her future husband, they both managed to miraculously catch their footing, and Dawn said it was the moment he met his true love. She had just saved his life for the first time. She would do it again once more, but I'll tell you that a bit later. Now let's meet Phyllis. Born in Sri Lanka, September 24, 1894, as Phyllis Beatrice James, she would move to the interior of BC in 1901 at 7 years old. There are some tales of the family first living near a farm around Sydney, Manitoba, before heading to BC. But to be honest, I just was not sure, so I'm going to say they may have. In 1907, at age 13, they would move again with her family, this time to Vancouver. As a young girl, she loved adventure, the outdoors, and exploring. As a teenager in 1910, with the help of her mother, with the paperwork, she started her very own Girl Scout Club. There were none in Vancouver at the time, only Boy Scout Clubs. In 1912, she would climb Grouse Mountain at 18 years old with the Girl Guide Company. In 1915, at age 21, she joined the BC Mountaineering Club and began going on club trips, climbing such mountains in the area as Mount Seymour, the Lions, and Mount Tantalus. She was more the life of the party type. She loved people and wanted to help wherever she could. She met Dawn on one of these trips, as we know, and she saved his life, starting up a quick friendship between the pair that led to marriage on February 4, 1920. She was 26 years old and he was 30. They were married at 9 a.m. and would rip those wedding clothes off, switch into their mountain climbing gear, and be halfway up Dam Mountain in just 2 hours after they said I do, to enjoy their honeymoon in Dawn's cabin. Now, isn't that just romantic? If that's not the Canadian dream, I don't know what is. In 1921, 1 year after the couple was married, their daughter Edith was born. At just 11 weeks old, in a pack on her dad's back that he had made for her himself, the family would make their way up Crow Mountain together. That same year, the pair would join the Alpine Club of Canada. In 1922, on the border of BC and Alberta, Phyllis, 28, and Dawn, 32, would make their first ascent together up Parapet Peak. If you're not familiar with the term ascent, it means to climb to the top of the mountain. At the annual camping trip in 1924, at age 30, Phyllis would climb to the top of Mount Robson, making her the first woman to ever do so. At the time, the highest mountain in Canada, 3,954 meters, or 12,972 feet. She quickly became well known in the mountaineering community after this feat. From 1923 to 1926, the family would live in a tent on Grouse Mountain. They would later build a cabin to stay in. Dawn was hired to cut a trail from Lonsdale Ave in North Vancouver to the summit, while Phyllis ran a small cafe serving hot drinks and meals for hikers along the trail. In 1925, the couple was on Vancouver Island on a trip to check out Mount Arrowsmith. It is said while they were taking a small break on a ledge near a tree line that looked back on the mainland for lunch, allowing them to see what Don himself would claim in his own memoir. Phyllis's eyes shone as she handed me the binoculars and pointed to a tall mountain nearly due north. It was the far-off finger of destiny beckoning a torch to set the imagination on fire. The compass showed the alluring peak stood along a line passing a little east of Butte Inlet and perhaps 150 miles. The mountain was exactly where there was still a blank space left on the map. At the time, there were still many areas yet to be discovered. The pair had just stumbled upon their greatest adventure, discovering their own Mystery Mountain. Don and Phyllis believed right away the peak to be taller than Mount Robson and were overcome with excitement. Experts in the area told them the mountain didn't exist, but the Mondays knew it did. They had seen it with their own eyes. The following summer, they would set out to find it. Okay, it's time to get your gear together. We're about to go on our first climbing trip here on the channel. Get those boots tied tight, rain jackets out, backpacks packed the way you want them. We've got a 55 kilometer or 35 miles upriver hike to make. There will be spiky plants that will make you itch for days if you touch them. There's quicksand, constant rain, and we have to make some log bridges to cross the river along the way. And that's all before we get to the mountain and have to climb. Side note, to see a great video with a description of all the gear needed to make this journey back in 1926, check out the National Post video I have linked below. And there is also a great article with pictures of Don and Phil's adventures. There is a group retracing the steps of the Mondays this summer. They are traveling with the same type of gear and equipment available back then to try and replicate the expedition. Six people that claim to be history nerds are a part of the Canadian Explorations Heritage Society. Love Mountains and Adventure are set to go this July. It's a great video and article. Do check it out if you really love this tale and want to know more about it and see some visuals. Lucky for us, this is a podcast, so all our climbing gear will be at the mountain waiting for us. Oh yeah, and of course, there's wolves, mountain lions, and bears, so do be on your guard. You never know what we might run into. The Mondays. Don's brother Bert and three other men would join us on our first adventure up the mountain, carrying 800 kilograms or 1,763 pounds of gear and supplies. Phil, as most people referred to her, was considered an equal by her husband and by most other men. She was not a petite woman, standing just a few inches taller than her own husband, and she could carry her own weight in supplies with no complaints. Most men often carried less than Phil did. She was an extraordinary, strong woman. They would take a ferry to Butte Island and then begin the long 55-kilometer or 34-mile hike up the river that I mentioned above. The team would hike along the banks of the river, cutting their own trail through the brush as they went. They ran into things like fire ants, other insects, and of course, those stinging plants. They were stalked by wolves and had the ever-changing river roaring beside them. It was a pretty scary place to make their way through. It would take longer than expected for the team to get to the mountain. The gear and supplies were much heavier and harder to transport than expected, and had to be moved in chunks. They would grab what they could, move it up the trail, and come back, grab some more, taking about 3 to 4 trips each time to move everything entirely. This put the team very behind schedule. It took 13 days to move 160 kilometers. That's about 12 kilometers or 7 miles a day. According to livestrong.com, the average hiker can push through 19 to 25 kilometers or 12 to 15 miles a day. So yes, they were losing a lot of ground that could have been covered daily. The good news is, we made it through this part of the trip, and now it's time to start climbing. Grab your harnesses, ropes, helmets, clamps, and more. On June 23, 1926, Don and Phil would make their first attempt to climb their mystery mountain. But due to their late arrival, the weather conditions were not ideal. Things had begun melting and shifting, and they were plagued by avalanches. Phil even suffered from snow blindness on this trip, which is said to be painful and almost like having a sunburn on one's eyes. It can also cause temporary vision loss. They would also run out of food on this trip and had to turn back for home. But not all was lost. They had photos, measurements, and more of their mystery mountain, and they could now prove it existed. They also discovered that the Franklin Glacier came off the Mystery Mountain at this time. This trip was a learning adventure for the team. They discovered quickly they would need more winter gear in order to make this ascent in the future. Don, being a writer, would spend the winter and many more filling the local papers and mountaineering press releases with stories and pictures of his Mystery Mountain. This time, as the Mondays headed out in 1927, BC was watching in excitement, hoping they would find their Mystery Mountain. Don had hyped them all up with his stories of his first adventure. Don would measure his glorious Mystery Mountain to be 13,260 feet. That's about 4,030 meters. He used a method known as triangulation, where one uses tracing a series of triangles to determine a measurement. He would use this method to get the height, and he was only 54 feet or 60 meters off. That's pretty accurate, I'd say, for the 1920s. This made the Mundane's Mystery Mountain 214 feet or 65 meters taller than the famous Mount Robson. They were even more determined to find it and prove it was real to everyone. Since Phil was a lady, social norms at the time said she had to wear a skirt or a dress. She stuck to these norms right up to the base of the mountain, and then it was skirts off and bloomers out, as she was also a practical woman and knew in no way was she climbing in a skirt. She learned this trick back in her earlier days as a Girl Scout. They were a lot smarter from their previous trip, and this time brought skis to transport their gear, supplies, and themselves across the never-ending snow, ice fields, and glaciers that they knew they were going to encounter. And lucky for us, they brought us some too, so we can keep up. Not only did the skis save a lot of time and much needed strength, they are also believed to be the first mountaineers to use skis to their advantage on a trip, as they were thought more of just a toy or a pastime back then. They were not used like they are today for so many different styles. The couple was known to be at their very best in the snow and knew how to move through it using their skis. They would lead us up and over the Franklin Glacier this time. As we start to climb up in elevation, the oxygen begins to thin and the whole team begins to slow down. At some point on this trip, Phil is smacked in the head by a falling rock. Dawn bandages up her wound, and Phil, being the strong woman she was, continues on as if nothing had happened. The team again on this trip would not reach their goal, but came back with even more info. Don would spend another winter writing to the local papers, especially Vancouver, as well as climbing journals, research papers, and more. The hype around Mystery Mountain grew, and the skeptics were still sure it did not exist. In 1928, the Mundanes would head out again, this time with a little bit of luck on their side. This would be their most successful trip to date. They would take even more photos, collect insects, plant specimens. They created a catalog of the area full of sketches, measurements, and other writings. During these expeditions to Mystery Mountain, Edith stayed with a family friend, as it was much too dangerous for a young child up there. Today, this area is regarded as one of the most dangerous, remote, and rugged places, along with being very challenging to climb in all of North America. On this trip, they would finally reach the Northwest Summit. They decided the ascent to the peak they so desperately wanted to climb was just too dangerous and were happy with their achievement. Their main goal was just 60 feet above their heads. The hype would continue around Mystery Mountain, and quickly became the most sought-after ascent on the planet by the mountain climbing community. In 1930, the couple would make the ascent of another mountain that would later be named after them, Mount Monday. It can be found in the Waddington Range, 6 kilometers southeast of their beloved Mystery Mountain. They were the first to make the mountain's ascent and map it. They are also credited with exploring and mapping much of the south coastal mountains. Mount Monday stands at 11,000 feet or 3,336 meters. There is also a Baby Monday Peak in the area that was later named for their beloved daughter Edith, who joined them on so many of their adventures. They would spend a decade exploring what we know today as the Waddington Range and Mount Waddington. Mapping every inch they could, they climbed over 100 mountains together, it is said, easily. In the summer of 1934, they would make their final attempt to reach the ascent of their beloved Mystery Mountain. There was even another expedition there at the same time. They were a group of climbers from Winnipeg and BC. They took the northwest flank, which the Mondays had not tried before. So the pressure was on to get to the top this time. This trip was a rough one on the Mondays, and things did not go as planned. They spent 2 days building a bridge over a creek. From June 23rd to 26th, they spent climbing the mountain shoulder of their Mystery Mountain at 3,000 meters or 10,509 feet. 2 days later, on June 28th, they would attempt the summit, but due to bad weather and very poor conditions of the route up ahead, they had to turn back. They were only 180 meters or 590 feet from their goal. They again reached the northwest summit. The other group of climbers made their attempt on the southeast side on June 23rd. They would set up their base camp. 3 days later, on the 26th, they would make an attempt to climb the summit when one of their climbers fell on the southeast ridge and could not be saved, which quickly ended their trip. The Mystery Mountain ascent would remain untouchable until 1936, when two young American men made the dangerous climb. The Mondays would make 8 trips in total over the course of a decade in which they had their love affair with the Mystery Mountain. To this day, the data they collected is the most extensive that has ever been done on the area. They never did stand on their beloved mountain's top, but they did stand right underneath of it twice. There is an awesome film from the North Vancouver Virtual Museum. It's only 5 minutes if you have the time to check it out. It will be in the links below. They, of course, would continue to explore and map any mountains they could and bring Edith with them. In 1936, while climbing to the top of Silverhorn Mountain, Dawn would encounter a bear head-on, and Phil was not having any of it. With no fear at all, she chased that bear, yelling and screaming, carrying an ice-climbing axe, and that bear never returned to bother them again. The Mondays would continue to make ascent after ascent. They made 8 first ascents together, I believe, in total, which means they were the first 2 people ever recorded to be on top of 8 different mountains. Not to mention the hundreds they just climbed because they wanted to. They made a career out of adventure when most believe it could not be done or had even considered it. They will forever be known as one of the greatest Canadian mountaineering couples that ever lived. Such local features today as Blackcomb Mountain and Spearhead Range were named by the pair. Waddington Mountain today and the range surrounding it are famously linked to their adventures thanks to Don's memoir he would publish in 1948 and dedicate to the love of his life, Phil. It's called The Unknown Mountain. It's quite a piece of treasure in the climbing community, so original copies of the book in paperback form go close to $200. It was also reprinted again in 1975 But those copies are even harder to find as they are much cheaper and go much quicker. Their beloved daughter Edith would marry in 1944 and move to England with her husband, Brad Wickham, and they would have two daughters. Just 6 years later, Don would pass away of pneumonia in 1950. During the war, he had been gassed, and the many hard winter conditions in the mountains had all affected his lungs. Phil would continue to climb and hike as she knew Don would want her to, but she never made a high-altitude climb again without him. After Don's funeral, Phil flew out to the Waddington Range and spread some of her beloved Don's ashes where the couple had spent so much time together. Phil Munday would be recognized for her humanitarian work with the Girl Guides of Canada, the St. John's Ambulance, and her discovery of Mount Waddington with her husband. She was awarded the Order of Canada in 1972, which she told some she didn't think she really deserved it. But of course, everyone around her knew she did. She once told a reporter during an interview the one thing that frightened her the most. Any guesses? You'd think wolves, snakes, maybe, 'cause we know she's not afraid of bears. Oh, the stinging plants, or quicksand, right? Wrong. It was the thunderstorms. She hated them, she said. In August 1982, at 87, she was taken back near Mount Waddington one more time, thanks to the BC government and the CTV network, who put on a documentary piece they called Thrill of a Lifetime about her tale. She was able to see the view she had enjoyed for so many years once more. She would pass away peacefully after a life fully lived at 96 years old. And in 1998, for all you stamp collectors out there, she would be honored with a stamp. Don and Phil Munday, we remember you here on this podcast, and thank you for your countless contributions to the southern coastal mountains. Without your tireless love of adventure, we may not have known about some of these gems until much later. Just going on this adventure with you to find this mystery mountain is one I'll surely never forget. This is truly a great Canadian love story, full of adventure and history around every corner. It really should be made into a movie one day. I'm Canadian Girl. Until next time, my friends. At the beginning of this episode, I may have mentioned something about having a Patreon channel with crews for you to join, but I have come to find it was not the best course of action for this show. So if I did mention anything about Patreon, I apologize. That being said, if you do want to support the show, you can do that now in three simple ways. The first is the absolute easiest way and means the most. If you could kindly leave us a shiny 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, this small gesture helps our show out so much by allowing us to move around on the podcast charts so we can meet more awesome listeners just like you. The second thing you can do is stop by our souvenir shop where you can pick up episode-themed gear. The shop has everything from t-shirts, sweatshirts, water bottles, cell phone cases, and more. Grab a souvenir today from your favorite adventure to take on your very own. The third and final way to support the show is by donation. We have an amazing PayPal button that you can find right at the top of our webpage at nothingcanada.com. Allows you to donate as much as you want, whenever you want, to the show. That way we can buy a new book for research, new equipment, pay for the show's website. You can find all the links to help support the show in the notes below. I thank you so very much for your support. My friends who always listen to the very, very end, you're the raddest people out there. I hope your week is straight summertime awesomeness after this chilly adventure, because you deserve it. I'll meet you back here as soon as I can with our next adventure. Until then, I'm sending positive vibes all your way, and I hope you're sending them back mine. I'm Canadian Girl.